Reporter Rick Atkinson of The Washington Post was embedded with the 101st Airborne Division during the war in Iraq last year. He was assigned to the division headquarters, in particular to shadow the division's commander, Major General David Petraeus. Atkinson's account of the war, as seen through Petraeus' eyes, is the basis for his new book titled In the Company of Soldiers. General Petraeus is the son of a Dutch sea captain. He's a West Point graduate with a Ph.D. from Princeton in international relations. Before the war, he'd spent 25 years with the military on peacekeeping missions as an aide to generals. But Rick Atkinson writes that one thing was missing, a combat patch. Petraeus had never been to war.
He's the only guy I know who survived a gunshot wound from an M16 in a training accident to the chest in 1991 when he was a battalion commander, and the collapse of his parachute in a skydiving accident so that he plummeted to the ground and shattered his pelvis. He had not been in combat, but all of a sudden he finds himself responsible for 17,000 soldiers in the original Band of Brothers, the 101st Airborne. And so I was able for really 2 months to watch him closely and watch him come to grips with the responsibilities, the crushing responsibilities of command.
Petraeus is a remarkable physical specimen, and he's really tough. I mean, when he runs across other soldiers, he's very inclined to put them to some kind of physical test.
Yes, he's a physical fitness fanatic, I think it'd be fair to say. He's not very big. He's 5'9", weighs 155 or so. He can run like a deer. And there was one scene where, before we went into Iraq, he was down on the docks in Kuwait City watching his equipment coming off one of the ships bringing the 101st gear to the theater. And he got into kind of a trash-talking scene with a 19-year-old private first class named Jonathan Aylshire. And one thing led to another, and before you knew it, Petraeus, who at that time was 50 years old, had challenged PFC Aylshire to a push-up contest. And there was a circle made by the soldiers watching. It was like a prize fight, and they're counting. 1, 2, 3. 18, 19, 20. They got to 27. Aylshire collapses. Petraeus does 20 more and then pops to his feet, not having broken a sweat. And he says to Aylshire, "You can write that off on your income taxes as part of your education." That's Dave Petraeus.
Sounds like a guy that a lot of the men respect and maybe not so many like.
You know, he's got a serrated intellect. He's not easy to love, but he was universally respected and instantly obeyed. No doubt about that.
There's a scene in the book where you describe a debriefing session the morning after a helicopter regiment has run into a whole lot of trouble, and there's a lot of second-guessing about what went wrong. And what's revealed is that the Army had extremely limited information that seems very basic.
It was absolutely fascinating. I've been around the Army all my life, including as an Army brat. I've never heard or witnessed anything quite like this. The 11th Attack Helicopter Regiment sent two battalions of Apaches the night of March 23rd, with the intent of finding the Medina Republican Guard Division and chewing them up. The intent was to basically destroy the Medina and cut a hole in Iraqi defenses south of Baghdad. Instead, what they found was a whole lot of very well-organized small arms fire. 30 of the helicopters came back. 29 of them were full of holes, average 15 to 20 holes per helicopter. And they had a conference by speakerphone with Apache pilots from the 101st who were to go out on a similar mission that night. And I sat there and listened for an hour as these pilots who were exhausted, who were stunned, who were befuddled, really, tried to make sense of what had happened.
And they were expecting what exactly? And what did the reality turn out to be?
They were expecting that the Apache, which is a very sophisticated $20 million airplane, really, was going to be able to use its sensors to detect sophisticated Iraqi air defenses and to neutralize and negate those and to find the tanks in the Medina division and the armored personnel carriers that the Iraqis had there and to destroy them. Basically, there's a belief you can wipe out 100 armored vehicles in 20 minutes. Instead, what they found was that the Iraqis had, through a system of early warning alerts using cell phones, had alerted those on the flight path that the Americans were coming. And there was an organized system in which the lights in these small towns were turned off and turned back on. 2 seconds off, back on, and that was a signal to everyone with a rifle or any kind of a weapon to fire straight up into the air. And the Americans flew right into this barrage fire. They never even got close to the Medina.
How did General Petraeus take that knowledge, and did it affect how he ultimately led the division?
Very much. Petraeus recognized that a new ball game was really starting, and that night they canceled the mission for the 101st. They didn't fly until five nights later. They used a much different approach to the Iraqi areas where they were flying, basically trying to avoid the same mistakes that the 11th Attack Helicopter Regiment had flown. And they also realized, belatedly, that the conditions were really detrimental to operating helicopters. The dust, which was this 4 or 5 inch layer of brown talc, was so intense that it was very, very difficult to land and to take off in ways that had not been fully appreciated. And the issue of what to do with the Apache a year later is still bedeviling the Army.
Since you were shadowing the general, General Petraeus, you were kept at a somewhat of a remove from a lot of the nitty-gritty of battle and certainly the civilian casualties, but you do describe a scene of a family fleeing the fighting. They're coming down the road, they're pushing a cart, and their eyes are wide with fear. The man of the family is sobbing. And you describe this conflict of emotions that you have within yourself. And the part that intrigued me was that you said you felt debased by the victor's pleasures that the day had brought. And I wonder about that sense of how the embedding process of your being part of this unit and so connected to the general may have affected your perspective of what was going on.
Yes, I did feel somewhat debased because the day had brought the crowds that had been long awaited out, and there was cheering, and the soldiers were welcomed as liberators, and we got into this waving business where we would wave back to them. And, you know, I felt that the satisfactions that came with that were really slightly tawdry compared to the deep human tragedy of this family. I think that reporters in circumstances where they're cheek by jowl with the military just have to be aware that, you know, you can be co-opted. There's always a danger of being co-opted when you're close. You share this very intense experience with these people, people that I personally liked and admired. And I think one of the differences between a good reporter and one who's less good is the ability to try and maintain that distance and try to look at it with objective eyes, even as you acknowledge that you do admire them.
Rick Atkinson, thanks very much.
Thanks, Melissa.
Rick Atkinson's book is titled In the Company of Soldiers.